Need a few minutes to reset? Great Minds is a podcast from SBS that guides you through different meditation styles from around the world. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea, from fresh water to salt water. Yiridimarang, hello, I'm your host Luana Grant and welcome to NITV Radio for this Friday, the 3rd of May. Coming up on today's show, NITV Radio chats to musician and author Ziggy Ramo about his latest album and debut book of the same name, titled Human. We chat to Ziggy about the upcoming Melbourne Writers Festival, where he will be involved in curating, and he will also share insights from his debut memoir. And we share a few stories from our NITV news team. All these stories and more coming up after the latest news.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
Sydney's Parramatta City Council has announced the launch of Landmark First Nations Strategy. The strategy will be aimed at improving access for First Nations people to public services and programs, grant funding and ensuring they have greater input in the decision-making process. It will also build on efforts to acknowledge and celebrate the rich history of the Darug community while respecting their culture. City of Parramatta Lord Mayor Councillor Pierre Espar says the strategy is about putting the Darug and First Nations people at the heart of the council. Assistant Minister of Indigenous Affairs Malindiri McCarthy has attended a historic congregation of the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association in Western Australia. The group of Indigenous doctors came together to hear from elders about the remote health experiences of First Nations people. Elders have made a call to the doctors to return to country following the end of their studies to provide culturally safe essential services. Ms. McCarthy told the ABC it is the doctors' decision if they choose to work elsewhere.
For First Nations people, whether they're doctors, nurses, paediatricians, it is about the choice to be able to return home should they wish to do so, or their ability to go where they feel they are needed. And what I found listening to the elders of the Torres Straits, working with these Torres Strait doctors, was that they were welcoming them home. Would certainly love to see some of them return to the Torres Strait to work as doctors full time, but also conscious of the fact that we still need more resourcing to be able to do that. But I have no doubt that many of those doctors will be returning to the Torres Strait.
The Premier of Victoria, Jacinta Allen, is set to give evidence in a historic appearance before the state's Indigenous truth-telling inquiry. Ms. Allen's participation in a public hearing of the Yurok Justice Commission marks the first time an Australian head of state will appear in a formal truth-telling inquiry. In the lead-up to her appearance, the Premier has reiterated her government's commitment to treaty negotiations. Yurok is the country's first formal truth-telling inquiry and investigates past and present injustices against First Nations people in the state. The Anglican Church has admitted to a Victorian inquiry there is an incredible disparity between its land wealth and First Nations people in the state. Representatives from the Anglican, Catholic and Uniting Churches on Wednesday fronted the Yurok Justice Commission in Melbourne. During the hearing, it was revealed the Anglican Church's property trust holds an estimated 260 hectares of land in Victoria, worth around $1.5 billion. Commissioner Tony North-Casey noted the commission was only able to ask the Anglican Church about its land ownership figures because the Uniting and Catholic Churches applied to keep their figures confidential. He said there was a shattering silence from churches about what they were doing to right historic injustices against Indigenous Victorians.
We come here today on probably the last day
hearing evidence from conscience leaders of our society, and again, the same acceptance of the truth about the past, but again, and in fact more so, a shattering silence about actions to redress it.
Prime Minister Anthony Albanese visited local organisations in Alice Springs this week, roughly a fortnight after the three-week youth curfew came to an end. Authorities say the curfew was an attempt to curb a surge in violence in the town, which was triggered after an 18-year-old was killed in a car crash. The Prime Minister spoke at Centralian Senior College in Alice Springs and says the feedback he's had from community is that the curfew was an enormous success.
And it seems to me it really has provided that circuit breaker.
Yes.
Just like last year, the decision that was made about alcohol was positive as well, had a positive impact. We need to not be ideological about this. We need to look at what works.
Yes.
And if it works, we're up for it. It's as simple as that. Mm.
Police ministers and first law officers from across Australia will meet to try to address the gender-based violence crisis. Attorney General Mark Dreyfus will host his state and territory counterparts in Canberra to determine what extra steps are needed to stop violence against women. Improved data sharing between jurisdictions about high-risk perpetrators will be on the agenda, as well as potential changes to bail laws. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese says the government's plans to crack down on misogynistic content online to reduce violence against women will not limit free speech. Leaders agreed to a pilot of age verification to stop children from accessing harmful online material, such as pornography, following a national cabinet meeting on gendered violence. An ad campaign will also be rolled out from June that will challenge misogynistic attitudes towards women on online platforms. The Prime Minister told the ABC that online content with harmful views about women can be highly influential on young people.
You have a debate at times about, you know, freedom of information and those issues, free speech. This isn't free speech to promote hatred and violence misogyny. We need to have that debate as a society as well.
The US State Department is urging Hamas to accept the latest proposal for a ceasefire in Gaza. Hamas says it's sending a delegation to Cairo to continue ceasefire talks. US State Department spokesman Matthew Miller says the proposal on the table answers many of the demands that Hamas made in previous rounds of negotiations.
Israel made a significant offer in this last proposal that went forward. They compromised on many long-held positions that they had taken. And as I said, met many of the demands that Hamas had said they needed to agree to a deal. So we believe it's now incumbent upon them to take the deal. The deal that they demanded, that has been offered, they should accept and move forward. It is Hamas that is the only barrier to a ceasefire right now, an immediate ceasefire, and we are waiting their response.
Meanwhile, the economic impact of the conflict in Gaza has been revealed to be enormous. The United Nations Development Programme says the costs are increasingly exponential with each day that the conflict continues, and that reconstructing Gaza is already likely to cost between $60 and $75 billion. Grocery food giant Woolworths has reported a slight increase in its domestic food sales in the last quarter after a small drop in prices. The supermarket chain says Australian food sales showed an increase of 1.5% to $12.6 billion, with price averages falling by 0.2%. In total, Woolworths has reported a 2.8% profit across its entire network, which includes its New Zealand supermarkets and Big W stores. Woolworths Group Chief Executive Officer Brad Banducci says cost of living challenges have been affecting the shopping basket of all Australians. Pioneering Aboriginal musician Bart Willoughby says he feels tremendous joy at being recognised with his latest award. The Pitjantjatjara and Mirning singer-songwriter, aged 63, is the 2024 recipient of the Ted Albert Award for Outstanding Services to Australian Music. Previous winners include Paul Kelly, Slim Dusty, The Seekers, Cold Chisel, and the late Uncle Archie Roach. A member of the Stolen Generations, he says music was his escape. Bart Willoughby was the lead singer and drummer for No Fixed Address, the first Aboriginal band to score a record deal, tour overseas, and appear on Countdown. He told NITV he is stoked to join the ranks of accomplished and legendary songwriters and musicians.
And so music is actually mending me. And so music's not music. Music is a living entity. For me to fall in love with it, you think deep about music. It's mathematics, it's affinity. You're dealing with all the big questions that scientists are asking using numbers. You just got music, and it can be just as powerful.
The book Praiseworthy by Aboriginal author Alexis Wright has emerged as the winner of this year's Stella Prize Awards. The awards recognise literary excellence by women, with six shortlisted novels being awarded $4,000 each. Ms. Wright's work, which also won the Queensland Literary Award, takes on many difficult issues such as climate change and its effects on the Indigenous community. During her speech for receiving the prize, the author said she was humbled to be listed among so many other great Australian book writers. And in NRL, the Penrith Panthers have defeated the South Sydney Rabbitohs 42-12. It's the first game the Rabbitohs have played since former South Sydney coach Jason Demetriou was sacked earlier this week. Interim coach Ben Hornby is filling in until Wayne Bennett takes over the position next year. The Rabbitohs' Jai Gray suffered a syndesmosis injury, ending the game in a moon boot. Cameron Murray says there was a lot of fatigue in their defensive line, adding that it's been a tough week and they're focusing on moving forward.
You know, it's not ideal circumstances, so I'm not going to sit here and lie and say it was easy, but in saying that, it probably wasn't as hard as everyone you know, thinks it was. At the end of the day, we're footy players, and it's about, you know, the men in the change room and us turning up as a group and teammates, and just trying to go out there and be good teammates and make good memories out there and play for your mates. So,
and that is NITV Radio's news wrap of the week.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio. Conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Luana Grant, and you're listening to NITV Radio. Still to come on the show, NITV Radio chats to musician and author Ziggy Ramo about his latest album and debut book of the same name, titled Human. We also chat to Ziggy about the upcoming Melbourne Writers Festival, which he's been involved in curating. But first, we share a few stories from our NITV news team. Thirty years ago, there were no Torres Strait Islander doctors in the region. Now, the Australian Indigenous Doctors Association has taken a group of 20 Torres Strait Islander doctors from the mainland to the islands for the first time. As Carly Willis reports, it comes as elders call for better access to healthcare across the islands.
For many of these students and doctors, it's the first time they've been on country, in their homelands in the Torres Strait. They're hearing firsthand from elders about remote health experiences.
It's been a very emotional, like, I've been very excited, but just to see how many Torres Strait Islander doctors and other medical students there is, I think it's very special and very important significantly, because there was the call from the community to have people come back.
Today, there are 127 Torres Strait Islander doctors across Australia, of 130,000 total doctors.
What AA to do really well is discuss cultural safety in the healthcare system, because we know that if the healthcare system isn't safe, Indigenous medical workforce won't work there.
The organisation says it's now working with Queensland Health to roll out training on culturally safe practice.
So we're really trying to actively work with them to understand cultural safety, and they are they're really engaging in that.
It comes as elders in the community call for better health access in the Torres Strait.
We in 21st century, maybe we're not in third world country. Australia should look more to remote communities, remote places. When you leave your country, you leave your home, your family go with you, everything's down. Our cultural protocols, everything's met.
Doctors say a federal government funding program falls short of what's needed for infrastructure for remote island dialysis units.
We have an abundance of salt water in our saltwater country, but being able to make sure that there's a right amount of water and quality water for dialysis treatment needs without infringing on just general community water needs, that's really important.
The Federal Assistant Minister for Indigenous Affairs flew to Wyben to hear the concerns. She says the government will commit 4 dialysis chairs to a facility on Bardu if there is water security.
For Torres Strait Islanders, there are just way too many who are needing to leave their communities to access dialysis, and I'm hoping we can make that a little bit better for them.
Keeping our elders in care on country. Collie Willis, NITV News.
The bunya tree has been around for more than 2 million years, and the nuts that it produces have been culturally significant for tens of thousands of years. Now, a group of scientists at Queensland University believe that bunya nuts could be a great business opportunity for local mob. Ricky Kirby has more.
The biggest stand of the trees is in the Bunya Mountains in southern Queensland and was an important location in pre-colonial times.
So the bunya's extremely significant to not only the traditional owners but all the visitors who used to converge here for thousands of years. It was the largest known gathering in the whole of the continent of Australia pre-colonial times.
The health benefits of the bunya nut have been known for thousands of years, yet they remained relatively unknown since colonisation. Now, scientists believe that the nuts could be as commercially successful as similar nuts from the same family in Brazil and Chile.
They are high in fiber. They contain all the essential amino acids, omega-3, omega-6 fatty acids. They also contain protein, folate, and the husk, the outer part of the nuts, they are high in antioxidant compounds.
The only drawback is that bunya trees only start to bear fruit after 30 years, and they don't fruit every year. But modern grafting techniques could significantly speed up the process. Locals are enthusiastic about the opportunities to tap the commercial potential.
It'll create an industry for mob, for people to be able to share what this mountain's always been about sharing. So being able to share that on a larger stage, a more substantial way, would be beneficial to economically, and we take a lot of pride in it.
Ancient foods looking for a modern market. Ricky Kirby, NITV News.
The cream of Australia's music industry gathered on Gadigal land in Sydney on Wednesday night for the APRA MCOS 2024 Music Awards. A host of black talent turned out for the awards, which saw 7 categories taken out by first-time winners. There were no First Nations category winners this year, despite a wealth of nominees, but legendary No Fixed Address singer, songwriter and drummer Bart Willoughby was presented the Ted Albert Award for outstanding services to Australian music. NITV reporter Dan Rennie caught up with Bart Willoughby to discuss the award and his monumental career making music.
I love performing, and it looks like that you can't change the rhythm on my soul, and so let's live together.
You can't change the rhythm of my soul. Whoa, whoa, oh, oh.
A name synonymous with Aboriginal Australia, now recognised by an industry he devoted his life to. A career spanning over 50 years, forming No Fixed Address and pioneering a fusion of reggae music with Indigenous Australian influences.
We have survived the white man's way.
I didn't even know I was good. In other words, my first song I wrote was good. If you check out a lot of people, their song, ah, shit, that's bad. How did you become a good? And then you can see the progress. No, mine was good straight away. But that was because I already had a gift of telling stories.
The Merning and Kukatha Songman, proud of his legacy of storytelling and truth-telling.
It's the way you explain the story. To a fella who's cheating or climbing, They'll tell you any lies to make themselves better, right? The real people who tell the truth are those who teach themselves how to tell the truth and don't cheat to bring down what's beautiful and left in Aboriginal culture.
A gifted singer, songwriter and multi-instrumentalist who paved the way for other mob.
And basically, if the music speaks to me when I'm playing acoustic guitar, the words and the music just join like a glove. Yeah? So I won't put the words to the music if the music doesn't speak to me.
Honoured for a lifetime of contribution to Australian music.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bart Willoughby.
Presented the award last night by two of your dear friends, Stephen Pigram and Don Walker. That must have felt really special to have those two present the award.
He's one of the most beautiful men I've ever met. He's just a smooth, smooth piano player. He just has a lot of... He cares.
I suppose when you see those highlights and you have those moments of reflection, what are you most proud of?
I think I'm proud of the whole package now.
Reflecting on his life and what keeps him going.
Love is forever. Hatred can't last at all.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. sbs.com.au/NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. I recently caught up with musician and author Ziggy Ramo about his latest album and debut book of the same name, titled Human, which is part memoir and part historical and invites readers to confront the realities of the colonisation and their own biases, dispelling the myths that this nation is built on. Ziggy has also been busy helping to curate the upcoming Melbourne Writers Festival running from the 6th of May up until the 12th of May. In this interview, Ziggy chats about his third upcoming album and his debut book, as well as the creative process he went through while working on these projects.
My name is Ziggy Ramo and I am a musician. I've also worked across the arts, so in 2022 I made my debut in acting and scoring, and most recently I've written a book that is also an album, so each chapter is a song on a new album that I have coming out as well.
Yeah, awesome. And as you mentioned, you know, you've been in the music scene for a while. Can you talk a little bit about your journey into music and what your inspiration is for your music and storytelling?
Yeah, definitely. I kind of from like the age of 15, I got bitten with the bug of music and storytelling. And I think coming from an oral culture, storytelling is how we literally hold, preserve and share knowledge. So I think I'd always understood that storytelling was such a pinnacle of who we were and are as a people. So combining, I guess, that innate understanding and then bug for music led me down a path of trying to find truths and stories that I could kind of forge into art. And so when I was around 19, 20, I started kind of writing my debut album, and then 5 years later, I released that in 2020 called Black Thoughts. And then from there, I've just kind of been chipping away. And yeah, I guess for me, the biggest driving factor is just trying to create change within our community and use my art as a space to really share my perspective and understanding on our history and what it is to have our lived experience, or my lived experience, I should say, sorry.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about your music shortly, but we'll talk a little bit about the Melbourne Writers Festival, which is coming up in May, running from the 6th through to the 12th of May. And you're one of the curators at this year's festival. Do you mind telling us a little bit about it and talking to some of the events that you've pulled together for the festival?
Yeah, so as I've said, at the end of this month, my debut book is coming out. It's called Human, A Lie That's Been Killing Us in 1788. And I'd had an idea for a while to create a book that was also an album, because working in music, I think the way that medium impacts people is so powerful. But with a manuscript, you just have so much more space for nuance and depth to like really dive into different themes and context and scope. So I was drawn to writing the book, and from there the Melbourne Writers Festival reached out with the release of my book and asked if I would come on board as a curator. So I've had the privilege of putting together a couple of events. One is called Who Gets to Be Human, and there's an amazing group of authors that are going to come together and have a chat about that as a launching point. And then I'm also doing it in conversation with Jan Fran, where we're going to kind of talk about the book and the project, and I'll play a couple of songs from the upcoming album as well.
Yeah, awesome. And how are you feeling about being able to share your book with this year's audience?
I'm really excited. It's a bit of a big unknown. You know, like, obviously when you're creating art that is going to challenge the majority of the audience, you kind of have to let go of predicting the outcome and predicting how people are going to respond. I think I've tried to just create a really genuine and sincere offering, and it's kind of an invitation, basically. I think it's kind of reevaluating what we're doing here as a group of humans, because I don't think that we wish harm upon others. I just don't know if we have the understanding what the cost of the privilege of the lucky country is. And with the work in the book that I've created, it's just trying to remove some of that smoke and mirrors and get us all on the same page so that we can kind of figure out how we're going to move forward together. So I'm really excited. Like, it's taken a long time. Like, writing an album is hard, writing a book is hard, doing them at the same time is almost impossible. So it's been a really big undertaking, but I'm really proud of it, because I think, you know, art has the ability to connect and stay around for quite a while. So I'm really hoping that it is a tool that allows people to engage with, you know, what's going on in our country.
And as you mentioned, you know, that process of writing an album and writing a book, what was that process like for you, and how long did it actually take to, you know, do all of that? Sounds like such a big piece of work, but also super important, and, you know, truth-telling and storytelling. What was that process like for you, and, yeah, how long did it take?
It was a really big undertaking. I get all these grand ideas, and then it's about going and actualizing them.
Yeah.
And that can just be pretty never-ending. So, you know, like, the initial seeds of this idea came to me in, like, 2016, after I had written Black Thoughts. And then at that point, I was very fresh in this space. So I have, like, emails from 2016, 2017, where I'm kind of cold emailing publishers being like, I'm going to write a book, and it's an album, and it's this, and it's that. And that obviously didn't get much response. I understand why. It's pretty crazy. But then I'd always had that idea. So, you know, Black Thoughts is a pretty lyrically dense album, right? That has almost 7,000 words across that body of work. So the music, that is a lot. And what I started to think about, like why I wanted to turn that record into a book, was that there's so much history and scope that if you haven't had a lived experience, can kind of go over the top of your head. And so I'd always kind of had that idea. And then I made a song called Little Things that was in collaboration with Uncle Kev Carmody and Paul Kelly. They allowed me to rework the obviously iconic song from Little Things, Big Things Grow. And when I did that, all of a sudden I got a pretty overwhelming response from a lot of teachers and schools, with them sharing like how they had used that song as a resource for different lessons in primary school, in high school. And that was so powerful. And I think it really showed me that there is a thirst for this. It's just about, you know, getting it out to people. And so with that idea of wanting to make a book and then the experience with Paul and Uncle Kev, I kind of then took that all and was like, okay, it's not about turning Black Thoughts into something. It's about creating this new piece of work. So I started writing the manuscript in 2021 at the same time that I was demoing all of the songs. And I did that pretty intensely for a few weeks. And then I kind of had to step away because it was a very big outpouring. And then over the years, well, over the last kind of 3 years, it's been re-engaging with that work as I've kind of felt ready. So, I mean, it's 3 years to an extent, but it's also kind of been stop and start because I really believe, I mean, for myself as an artist, I like to create from inspiration, not because of like fear of a deadline.
Mm.
Because I think when we're trying to share truth as an artist, you have to be in a place where you're ready to be honest and ready to, like, especially when you're creating art from a place of intergenerational trauma, there's an element of re-traumatizing yourself to unearth it.
Yeah.
And so for me, I think I kind of create in almost like short, sharp sprints, and then I need to step away from it for a while and then kind of come back to it. So it's been a little bit of a windy road that's not really linear, but I think it was always like the art and the story was always the priority. So it's just kind of unfolded and appeared how it was supposed to. And then in hindsight, you're like, it's 3 years and it was this and it was that. But it was really just trying to find the most honest and genuine representation and presentation of the story that I was trying to convey.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. In this second part of my chat with musician and author Ziggy Ramo, he talks to us more about his debut book, Human, and the Melbourne Writers' Festival.
So the book comes out at the end of April, the start of May. And so the way it works is each chapter starts with the lyrics of the songs and they kind of set the thesis of what is going to be explored. And then within the chapter, we dive into those themes and we look at the scope and the history and the context and then how that has then directly impacted my life and my lived experience. Because I think sometimes when we talk about, you know, big concepts like systemic oppression or genocide or incarceration rates or native title and land claim, like these can all be kind of arbitrary concepts, but then how that connects to a human's life can feel very removed. And so the chapters kind of dive into these touch points of history that have kind of directly leaked into my life, and then how those have impacted me, all kind of within the cocktail of intergenerational trauma. And so then that gives you an added depth and understanding for what those lyrics mean. And so at the end of each chapter, there's a QR code that you can scan and then listen to the song in its entirety. And then my sister, Bridie, is a pretty incredible visual artist as well. So me and her spoke about the themes that I was exploring in each song and chapter, and she then has made a piece of visual art that distills and synthesizes those themes, because I really wanted to create a three-dimensional project. So depending on, you know, where you're at in your life, you might come into this project through a piece of art or an interest in reading or an interest in listening to music. So I really wanted to remove any obstacle or hurdle to access this conversation so that you can all be a part of it. And so the music lives inside the book for a month or so, and then it'll be widely released after that.
Awesome. It's such an interesting process, and hearing you talk about it, I can't wait to read it and also listen to the music, because it sounds really special and really interesting. And I guess just finally, just for anyone that's keen to attend the Melbourne Writers Festival, can you tell them where they can get some more information about where it's on and tickets and things like that?
Yeah, that's such a good question. I assume if you look online, either go to social media or online to look out for more information with times and have a look at all the incredible authors. And I really hope people come out. I think it's going to be, because I think as well, like, I don't know for you, like within your work and the spaces that you're in, like it's felt, at least in my experience, like we're less and less having a space to like disagree with each other. And I think if we don't create a space for discourse, like that's, we don't learn.
Mm.
And for me, the whole point of this project was trying to create, you know, a book, visual art exhibition, music, songs, like all of these things that can create a space for discourse, like regardless of what your political views, because I think unless we actually can come together and talk to each other, we just create echo chambers where we get further and further away from each other. But the reality is it's going to take a collective of people for change, and that's really my concern when it pertains to our community, because the reality is, you know, we're 3.3% of the population. So in the current system, whether it's amending constitutions or treaties or whatever it is, it's as 3.3% of the population, we ultimately don't decide these outcomes. So for me and the Writers Festival and this project, it's really about trying to cut through to, because I think we've very effectively being able to have kind of all these smoke and mirrors to disarm the broader population to not feel like we have to engage in this. And I think when we have apathy, it disconnects us as humans, and then we just kind of create a repeat of similar cycles. So the hope is that when we hear each other's stories, it connects us to each other more as humans, and then through that connection we're able to hopefully bring about some semblance of change, because that would be nice. I think that's what we all want ultimately. So yeah, I'm really excited, and I hope that the Writers Festival is an opportunity for people to come and hear some different perspectives.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you so much, Ziggy, for coming on NITV Radio to chat about what's coming up for you in the Melbourne Writers Festival, and good luck with it all, and hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thank you so much.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
And that's all we have time for on today's program. You can listen back to the show anytime online or catch any of our stories on our website at sbs.com.au. NITV Radio will be back on Monday with more stories from right across the country. I'm your host, Luana Grant. Thanks so much for listening and have a great weekend.
SBS is Australia's most trusted multilingual broadcaster. Our listeners are loyal, highly engaged, and have supported countless local businesses. We offer advertising packages for businesses of all sizes. Our experienced sales team will guide you through the process of owning a great campaign. Bring your own ad or have our production team make you something in one of our 68 languages. Start the conversation with your new audience today. Email sales@sbs.com.au.